Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. All right, so let's get started. First of all, let's talk about your thermometer thing. You got the new...
Oh, the Nest.
You got the Nest installed.
Well, not thermometer, thermostat.
Thermostat, that's what I meant.
Yeah. I know I make the same mistake all the time.
And what do you think?
I think it is absolutely fabulous. I mean, I've only had it for a few days now, but it's already finished its learning mode. We talked about this on a previous show.
Yeah.
It, you know, you just replace your thermostat. It's really super simple. Took me about 10 minutes to do. And it learns your patterns. You can set it up with a schedule. The really nice thing about it is just a, you know, it's one of the old style. It looks like an old style thermostat where you turn it to one side, it goes down. You turn it to
Except
the other side, it goes up.
Like eye candy.
Oh, it's so much eye candy. It's unbelievable how much eye candy it's got. It's dead simple. Like, I know there's tons of programmable thermostats out there.
Yeah.
I had one in my, you know, the one that I replaced. But it's a real pain to use. I mean, yes, I can set up a program, and I can set it up and make it work. Then, you know, my wife is trying to use it, and it's just not user intuitive. You know, you can't just push the up arrow on the old thermostat and actually have the temperature go there. No, you have to actually set it to hold, or else the program takes over, and at the next time, you know, it could be like 10 minutes away, it'll reset the temperature again.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen with this thermostat. You set it at a temperature, it'll stay there, it'll figure out if you're in the room or not in the room or in the house, not in the house. It will detect if you're away, it'll detect when you come home.
Web support?
Full web support, mobile phone support is coming. It doesn't yet have Windows Phone support.
We'll get Clint on that. Ruckus.
There's a lot of people out there that really want it, and I'm sure that they're going to eventually create it. Their web support is pretty decent. You know, it's not anything to write home about, but it does the job.
Yeah.
You know, if you're, say, half an hour away from home, 15 minutes away from home, you can go using your phone and tell it to start up. Or it will just start learning when you start coming home and will set the temperature accordingly.
Yeah.
It connects to the internet and gets current weather. So it knows, hey, there's going to be a cold front, or, you know, there is a cold front approaching. We can jack up the heat a little bit more to be a little bit more comfortable.
Nice.
It is fantastic, especially for,
so,
you know, first time
through Wi-Fi?
It does hook up through Wi-Fi and Zigbee.
How do you set it? Does it have a display to, like...
It has a display. It was really, really funny. So you plug it in, and, you know, the first thing, it just comes right back, right on, and it says detecting wireless networks.
Yeah.
You choose it with the dial, so everything is right there.
Nice.
I chose my Wi-Fi access point. It can handle WPA2, which is what I've got mine set to. Setting the password was kind of interesting, you know, on a rotary dial, right? So you have the entire alphabet.
It's like a crack in a safe.
Yeah, so it's you got rotary control and you have push control on it to select things. You know, so that took a little getting used to, but thankfully you only had to do it once.
And it
was really intuitive. The instructions on it were, there was nothing about the application, right? There's nothing about programming it really in the paper instructions. It was all about how do you replace your old thermostat and put this one in. It gives you handy little stickers to label your wires. Mine was a four wire system. It was, again, very simple, no screws involved in the wires. You just have to push down some clips and insert the wires in,
like a speaker or something.
Exactly. And it was two screws into the wall. I was able to reuse one of the anchor points from the old thermostat. So again, super, super simple install. Like, these guys really nailed it in terms of user experience.
I think I'd like to do this. I'm worried that I'm going to have to paint, though. I got a big thermostat now.
Yeah, so they do say, you know, if you've already got it off, paint or spackle and paint.
All right, well, it sounds cool. And the interesting thing with this is, it makes me think, you know, because the whole thing is based around good design. Very interesting, very simple, simplistic design. How many other things are there in the world? I mean, because every house has a thermostat. Everyone's going to want some kind of a nice, simple design thing like this. So how many other things are there in the world that, you know, if you just make a better mousetrap, it's going to be, you know, a very popular business for you? So,
well, that's the funny thing about consumer electronics, right, is... there's so many small computer electronics companies. They're always trying to design something with more buttons, more features.
Yeah.
Here's a case where you know what? There aren't a ton of features, at least not that are user exposed.
Yeah.
Everything is all about their algorithm. And they use cloud computing in the back end. That's where all the smarts are. It's really just a dumb front end to what's happening on the back end where it's doing all this number crunching.
Cool. Less is more.
Less is more, absolutely. You know, there is no buttons. It's like the entire face is a button and that's it. That is the epitome of simple design, which works very well.
Awesome. All right. Well, I might be next then. All right. First question from Dan Harris in the comments. If I encrypt my files using BitLocker and then create a system image using the tools built in Windows 7, will I be able to restore from that system image and still have access to all the files that were there at the time the system image was created?
Absolutely.
Unless you change your hardware.
I mean, unless you
switch out your motherboard and your hard drive or something, you might have an issue there.
Yeah, and you have to, of course, as the question stated, use the built-in tools.
Yeah.
With third-party tools, there's no guarantees.
Yeah, okay. Next question was, what kind of encryption does BitLocker use? 128-bit AES.
AES, yeah. With some extensions.
Yeah. All right, next question. Curtis Baker asked, does Windows 7 defrag the page file or hibernation file? And what is the minimum number of free space required on the hard drive for Windows 7 defragmentation to run?
By default, it doesn't do the page file or the hiber file because, generally speaking, they don't need to be defragged.
Yeah.
And general convention is, you know, 10 to 20%. It can defrag in as little as, you know, 1 gigabyte free.
But it's going to take you
takes significantly longer. And if you have, really what you need is the amount of free space as your largest contiguous file.
Yeah.
Right? So if you have a 2 gigabyte file and you only have 1 gig free, you're not going to get optimum defragmentation on it. Because it's going to be able to put, it's only going to be able to put half of it in one contiguous block.
Yeah.
In order to find, obviously, the best contiguous space, you want to have about half free, or more than half, slightly more than half free, in order for the system to say, well, you know, here's how I can most efficiently pack things.
Mm-hmm. And how does Windows work in that respect? I mean, does it start doing the smallest files first? How does it decide what to defrag and where to put it?
Well, it's a combination of algorithms where it puts most frequently used files together.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to seek as much, at least on a rotational system, which is what, you know, defragmenting is all about, is on a rotational system. And then it also tries to pack all the largest files together, or at least all the largest files in contiguous units, so that it doesn't have to jump to different spots on the disk system in order to get those large files.
Interesting. All right. Next question. How can I remove all folders and subfolders containing foo in the name from the command prompt?
Easiest way for me to do this would be using a PowerShell commandlet. It has a lot more regular expression capabilities than just a simple command. You know, you can do del foo star dot star, del star foo star dot star.
Yeah.
That'll get rid of file names, and you have to go through again and do it with directories. It's, you know, just a little bit more painful doing it that way. You can do it, but I prefer doing it through a PowerShell script.
And for someone who hasn't used PowerShell before, where should they get started? Is there, like, a good site that you'd suggest that...
There's a lot of different PowerShell sites. Just, you know, prefix your search query with PowerShell.
Yeah.
PowerShell Basics, PowerShell File System Manipulation, you know, that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of different resources out there by our PowerShell MVPs.
Cool. All right, next question. I've just brought a Windows 7 PC today, and I need .NET 4.0 installed first thing. Do I have to go through the progressions, add .NET 1.1, install Windows updates, .NET 2.0, 3.0, 3.5, et cetera, until I get to 4? Or can I just go straight to .NET 4 and download that and be done with it?
And this is a great question. I like this question. Windows 7 comes with 2.0, 3.0, and 3.5 already integrated. So there's no need to, A, you can't install those because they're part of the OS.
Yeah.
B, you don't need to install 1.0 or 1.1 of the framework. You can go directly to 4 because all of the frameworks live side by side.
Yeah.
So just get 4, get its updates. We recommend not using 1.0 or 1.1 anymore. Pretty much its functionality is in 2, So if you have an app that requires 1.0 or 1.1, it more than likely can be run under the 2.0 framework.
Now, I know I've had an app or two here that I've tried to run that says, hey, you need this earlier version. I'm like, what? I've got 4. So what's going on there?
The architecture of the .NET world is where you target for a particular framework. So while when you're coding up your app,
yeah,
you target a particular framework. And the whole design around that was, hey, we're only going to give you what you've asked for.
Yeah.
In the past, you know, what we've done is automatically roll forward some of them to 2.0 from the 1.1 world into 2.0. Pretty much everything does run correctly. There's an app.config file that is associated with the applications that will say, you know, what framework that you're targeting for. And if you have, you know, the problem app that says, you know, I need a very particular one, but you want to try it under the latest one, you can change that config file and say, I'm going to now run you under 4.0, for example. Yeah. If it was a 3.5 app, you can say, I want to try it under 4.0, see what happens.
It seems like every week I have an animal staring at me out of the corner of my eye. And I looked over, it's like, is it animated this time? Is it going to blink or something? All right.
I kind of want Bing to do, you know, the screaming faces.
Yeah.
With their
yeah, yeah.
It's like you have to leave it up for like 30 seconds, though.
Yeah, yeah. That would be awesome. They should do that for like Halloween or
exactly.
something.
Exactly.
They had a skiing one the other day that was pretty amazing, one of the video ones with a skier coming out. It was pretty cool. All right, next question. In Windows 7, the recent programs list in the start menu appears to be ordered by how often each program is used, or more specifically launched via the start menu. Is there a count that is kept somewhere that I can access? It'd be interesting to see how many times I run one app versus another.
There isn't a user accessible area for this. It's nothing exposed. The recently used items is actually more than that. It's a rather complex algorithm.
Of course.
Because everything is a complex algorithm.
Yeah.
But it isn't exposed. While you might think there's a rhyme or reason to it, sometimes you can't quite figure it out. There is a rhyme or reason, but we just don't document it.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so next question. I have a program that I want to either bring its window to the front or reopen after it's minimized. And it's on the taskbar, and hovering over it shows a preview in the window. However, clicking on it does not make it reopen and become visible. This happens with Notepad++ and Beyond Compare, both of which have tab panes. Any advice on how to force the window to reopen?
I've occasionally seen this, and it's one of two things. The app isn't responding to the window message to maximize mm-hmm. When you're clicking on the minimized window.
Yeah.
It's either busy, it's stuck. One thing you can do is Alt-Tab to try and bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
If that still doesn't work, it means that, yeah, there is either some other modal dialog that is not allowing it to come to the front, or it's busy, or it's hung.
Yeah.
If Alt-Tab doesn't do it, you can try WinKeyTab. That probably won't do it either. At that point, you may just have to kill the process.
Yeah, and WinKeyTab,
I haven't actually seen it with Notepad++, though, so
yeah.
It's another possibility is a misbehaving Windows hook in that process. But, I mean, I know Notepad++ does come up to the front if you click on it under normal circumstances.
So if you do WinKeyTab and mm-hmm. it's hung, will you be able to discern that, or will it use like a last known good image in that preview?
It'll be more like, does it even show up in the list?
Yeah. Okay. So when I saw this one, here's the one that I was thinking, because I do this every once in a while, is I've got an icon down on the taskbar, and I click it, and I think, oh, it doesn't pop up, it doesn't maximize, and I don't see it. And here's what happened in my case, and it takes me a minute every time to figure this out. But what's happening is I had multi-monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say I'm at work and I'm using a couple different monitors, and then I disconnect everything and I go home and I start up my laptop, and I'm hitting it, but it thinks there's another monitor, so it's actually maximizing to this other monitor there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to go, oh, yeah, and usually I can tell because when I click on it, you see the kind of swipe thing that comes
animation
up, and it's like heading towards wherever that monitor was. And so I'm like, oh, it's really going there, but, you know, it doesn't have that. So I just do a WinP and then, you know, computer only.
Mm-hmm.
And so that usually handles it for me. So that's where I've seen it before. So that might be the problem, too. All right, next question. I lack the choice to reboot shutdown via the start menu when logged into Windows 7 via remote desktop, whereas in Windows Server 2008 R2, It is there. Is there some setting in Windows 7 to enable reboot shutdown?
It is actually there. It's just a little bit more hidden. If you choose, and I'm not TS'd into a machine right now, but on the start menu, you'll see another button right here called Security Options.
Yeah.
If you click on Security Options, it'll bring up the lock screen, and then in the bottom right-hand corner down here will be a power button.
Yeah, the red thing.
The red arrow. Click on the arrow, and there will be the option to shut down.
Yeah.
Okay. Shut down or restart.
Cool. All right. I've got an external monitor hooked up to my laptop. If the monitor is plugged in when I boot, any time before Windows loads, the laptop screen is disabled. It's not recognized even after I log in, so function F4 is not an option. There's nothing in the BIOS regarding screens. The easy workaround is I unplug the monitor before booting up and plug it in as soon as Windows starts loading, but that's got annoying very fast, especially on soft restarts. I'm looking for something a bit more permanent. Laptop model is a HP G72 Windows Home Premium 64-bit SP1. And it's an Intel HD graphics. I've seen this before myself.
Really?
Yeah, I have. And it's almost like you're doing projector mm-hmm. only in the display options. I haven't seen it in a long time, though. Like, it hasn't been like
Windows. That's a pretty recent machine, though.
Yeah. And, you know, he's using Windows 7, so.
I mean, as you mentioned with the solution to your previous problem is look at WinKeyP mm-hmm. And see what it is actually set to. If it actually says, you know, display only, then I would check the display properties itself yeah. of the system. So if you actually go to, say, screen resolution, what actually shows up here? If yeah. it only shows the one monitor, mm-hmm. it means that the system actually disabled the internal screen from Windows even knowing about it.
Yeah.
In that case, you might need a BIOS update or a driver update from HP.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing, too, is it could be if you do Windows P and you set extended or however you want it, mm-hmm. Try rebooting right then, see if it maintains that and keeps the settings.
Right.
So I think that's worked for me in the past, but it's been so long since I've seen this that I can't really recall. So, yeah. All right, there you have it. Let's see, next question. I can't load my Windows 7. There's a lot of DCOM-related errors in the event log. I want to repair my installation, install Windows 7 to the same drive directory without wiping the disk, but I can't choose the upgrade option when I boot from the CD Windows 7 safe mode, and I can't boot into the normal mode. Is it possible to do a clean reinstall in this case?
While maintaining the applications?
Yeah.
Probably not. So if you kind of have to break up the problem a little bit, is A, you're not able to boot into the OS properly.
Yeah.
If you're not able to boot into the OS properly, then doing an upgrade may or may not actually recover the OS correctly. It
yeah.
could just be dragging along the same problem with the new OS.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of have to understand, you know, why it's not booting correctly. You know, I'd have to look at what the event logs are saying. DCOM really shouldn't actually stop it from loading up
yeah.
properly. Like, you should be able to get to the login screen mm-hmm. without that, without DCOM, you know, ever running.
Yeah.
But we kind of have to understand what it is that is not allowing that system to boot correctly. Barring that, you really don't want to take an unknown, even if you do successfully upgrade the OS,
mm-hmm.
because you might just be dragging along stuff that will cause you issues in the future.
Yeah.
Best possible thing to do is back up your data, back up your applications, you know, make sure you have install media for your apps or, you know, backup source for it, and just wipe and load.
Yeah.
But ideally, you know, we'd figure out why it's not booting correctly before doing a wipe and load.
Cool. All right. And we are at Pick of the Week. What a quick show
this
week.
That was a quick show, yeah.
Yeah, Pick of the Week. So, pick of the week this week, for me, anyway, it is the Lenovo Yoga.
Lenovo Yoga.
It's CES week. CES is still going on, and I saw this machine. There's a few videos of it online,
mm-hmm.
and it's worth checking out. It's a very cool-looking Windows 8-capable machine, and it kind of is the best of both worlds when it comes to a laptop and a tablet. So the way this works is you can take the screen and you fold it all the way over backwards, and then you can use it like a... And it's got 10-point multi-touch, too, which is nice.
That's like some of the HP all-in-ones. Big 27-incher has a 10-point multi-touch now, which is also a really cool machine.
Nice. So it's capacitive, then, instead
yes.
of the optical?
Yep.
Very nice.
It is a very nice system. You know, the one thing that I really like about this Yoga is that it's like the built-in case cover. You know, when you want to watch a movie or something, you know, you can just flip this over and just, hey, here it is.
Yeah. Or if you're sitting at your desk, you could just prop it up like this and have, like, you know, Long Zen's Metro Twit or something running.
It's really kind of funny that it's taken, you know, we've had tablet PCs in the past that have the single hinge in the center that you can swivel on.
Yeah, convertible.
The convertibles, right? But you've never really seen too often where you just take a regular laptop and there's no real fundamental reason why the hinge can't go more than 180 degrees, or in most cases, you know, what is that?
Like beyond 120, what it goes,
120, 140. So, I mean, it's not an entirely revolutionary idea, but this is, again, one of those cases of a simple design choice that is really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also, you know, it's got an aluminum case on it, so, you know,
built-in
it's going to be very, very a solid build, it looks like. The thing that I'm wondering about, and I assume it has to do this, is when you flip it around like that and you set it down, it's not pressing the keys and, like,
I'm hoping
for
a proximity sensor, man.
Of course. So, yeah, but interested to see people have used it and what they think about this. It's just one of the many machines that they've been showing at CES, but this one caught my eye, and I was like, that's the kind of machine I'd be looking for a Windows 8 machine. Cool. And your pick of the week was your Nest, right?
Well, that was an extension of the pick of the week. My other pick of the week is the Microsoft Kinect for Windows, the SDK and the new hardware that's being released. It has the advantage of being optimized for the half meter, the 50 centimeter
So sitting
range.
On your desk,
so you can
do your crazy Minority Report stuff while sitting at your desk.
I'm really wondering, you know, people for the past, you know, 30, 40 years... it's pretty much 40 years now with working with a keyboard anyway.
Yeah.
You know, mouse is again something that's a little newer.
Yeah.
But I mean, the computing paradigm has always been, you know, physical. You know, you're touching the machine, it's tactile.
Yeah.
You know, the Kinect is something that is really changing how we're interacting with computers, and it's just going to be really interesting to see where it takes us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen some apps that have been demoed about being able to track your eye and being able to choose things with your eye on the computer screen.
I love iTrack. Toby had a laptop that they drug into the studio here that had iTrack built into it, and
that
I was
just
fascinated.
Really, really cool. You know, some really awesome ideas, and I'm so glad that the Kinect hardware is enabling these ideas.
Yeah. This is interesting, and so this is it's different hardware.
It is different hardware.
Make sure people know that. So it does do a little bit closer range, a lot closer range, actually. So, can't wait to get one of these and try it out.
You know, they've optimized, they've learned from previous mistakes, right?
Yeah.
So second-gen unit. I don't know, however, whether or not it can ever be used on the Xbox hardware. That's something I'm unaware of.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It'd be interesting.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what kinds of apps come out with this. I mean, a lot of articles this week have been talking about the types of things like medical, because if you're in a clean room or you're a doctor doing surgery, there's a lot of instances where you don't want to touch anything, even don't touch a keyboard while you're operating on me, whatever you do, especially not any of our keyboards here. So, there's that. There's some manufacturers, like I think Toyota was talking about looking at some of these for some of the robotics things that they're doing.
The super high-end backup parking
camera. Yeah, I could see him using a mixture of both of these. They might want to use this for something that's really close. They might want to use the old Kinect for something that's a little bit further away. So, it's interesting to see what types of things people are going to do with this. So, yeah.
So, yeah, the SDK is going to be out super soon.
Beginning of February.
I'm hoping to attack that and see what interesting things they've got in it.
I can't wait to see what you do when you attack it.
Can you imagine, you know, tablets and PCs that could potentially be built in with a Kinect?
I've thought a lot about it. And I'm pretty excited about it. Now, I, like you were saying before, I don't think I could ever go without a keyboard. I couldn't go without a keyboard.
Sure.
But the things that would be possible are very interesting.
I don't really look at it in terms of a complete replacement. It's augmenting what you can currently
exactly.
do.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? So it's gonna add to everything else what you can do. So
like, can you imagine? Oh, you know, if you're in a room somewhere and you're say in the kitchen, you have a kitchen computer, right?
Yeah.
And you're all kind of goopy because you're cooking and you have a recipe on the computer, and you know, you don't want to touch the keyboard, you don't want to touch the mouse, but mm-hmm. hey, you've got it, it's Kinect enabled.
Don't touch your keyboard while you're cooking my food, please.
Exactly. You can do, something like, hey, swipe the air and flip the page to the next thing in the recipe. Just some really simple, easy, time savers, intuitive time savers that could be enabled.
Well, the other cool thing about Kinect that people often, don't pay too much attention to is it's got an awesome microphone array.
Exactly.
So the microphone array alone is cool enough that if it was built into a laptop, it'd just be off the hook. Because, when you're doing like a Skype call or if you're just, you want to tell different people. One of the things I'd like to see with Kinect is there's some dictation services and stuff, but like, what if two people are, can you like have two different users? Because now you can detect where they are in the room. Mm-hmm. You can say, person one said this, person two said that, and you could even tag names to the people. So it actually does transcription with, multiple people that would be,
Have you used, the Video Kinect at all on the Xbox?
On Xbox, no, I haven't.
So it does do, it's able to pick out people in the room and focus on them.
Yeah.
I do this when I'm talking to my relatives back in Canada. There's multiple people in the room and one of them starts talking and it'll focus in on them, and which is really kind of nice. I've got a 6-year-old nephew who's, little.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Kinect I know is really high up. And normally, in its normal position, you can't see him.
You see, top of the head, and you hear something.
You barely see the top of the head, but it's actually able to pick up on his little voice.
And it'll tilt down?
It'll tilt down.
Very cool. Nice. Yeah, when my Xbox is on, all I'm doing is Modern Warfare 3. So, that should be my other pick of the week, too. There's some new Modern Warfare 3 maps coming out, but it's kind of tangential to the show. So, Modern Warfare 3. Larry on 10 on Xbox if you want to play Modern Warfare 3 with me. So.
I think, we are tangential.
We are, especially pick of the week. It's supposed to be whatever we want to talk about.
We are a tangent.
Yeah, you got to drop the tech support at the end of the show and just do the picks of the week. All right, well, that's the show for this week. If you want to give us a holler, you can just send an email to defragshow@microsoft.com. You can also email defrag@microsoft.com. We have both of them now. You can leave notes in the show comments, and we can get to you there, but we like the email so we can go back and forth with you if we have to.
Come hit us up with some interesting Win8 questions, assuming you have the PDC build.
Yeah.
Or, more Win7 questions.
Start lining up the Win8 stuff, though. We'll be talking about that sometime soon, too.
Yep.
Awesome. See you next week.